Vice President Mike Pence opted not to wear a mask during a visit to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota yesterday, ignoring the clinic's policy. In images circulating on social media, Pence's bare face stands out in a crowd of masked healthcare workers and patients. But defying mask orders is nothing new. In San Francisco, during the flu pandemic of 1918, what people often refer to as the Spanish flu, there was even something called the Anti-Mask League, protesters who hated wearing those gauzy masks and may have contributed to a second wave of deaths. For more, let's bring in Dr. J. Alex Navarro. He's a historian and assistant director for the Center for Medical History at the University of Michigan. Dr. Navarro, welcome.
Hi.
So the Spanish flu, which was not actually a flu from Spain, was actually much deadlier than what we're seeing right now today. Take us back to that time. Were people doing things like social distancing like we are doing today?
They were. And the orders that they implemented back in 1918 in the fall wave were not as sweeping as the ones we're seeing today. These were not closures of all non-essential businesses. They were typically things like closing schools, closing churches, closing theaters and movie houses and places of public gathering and places of public amusement, as well as sometimes in outdoor, but usually indoor gathering bans as well.
Were people pretty compliant?
It's hard to measure compliance, especially from a distance of 100 years, when all we have really to go by are newspaper reports. It seems that in most places, people were compliant. Theater owners in a lot of cities did complain. But in certain places, San Francisco is notable, there were people who balked at some of these social distancing orders or these non-pharmaceutical interventions. And in San Francisco, in particular, it was the wearing of masks that was made mandatory. There were two mandatory mask orders in San Francisco. There was one that came in late October on the heels of some of the other social distancing measures. They lifted all the orders. The influenza came back, and they had another spike of cases. And the city decided to implement solely a masking order in January of 1919. And that was the one that people really detested.
Oh, really? Yeah, we understand that there were a lot of business owners who were worried about the impact to Christmas shopping, culinary workers, unions who wanted restaurants to reopen, clergymen who wanted their parishioners back together. This actually gets to this group called the Anti-Mask League. Tell us a little bit more about them and really this mood that they captured.
Yeah, so in the end of October and the first closure orders and the mandatory mask order, then there was a lot of grumbling. There seemed to be fairly widespread compliance with the masking order. It was sort of tied by officials and by the Red Cross. They tried to tie it to a sense of patriotism. And of course, this is wartime. So they tried to get people to comply that way. And most people did, although there were some arrests that were made and people were fined for not wearing their masks. In January, people really seemed to dislike wearing the masks. They didn't want to have to go through another set of any of these orders. And these masks, although probably not as uncomfortable as, say, an N95 today, they were made out of surgical gauze, they were still quite uncomfortable for people. And there was a sense from a lot of people that they were interfering with their civil liberties. And there were some there was grumblings about lawsuits being brought up. A group of people, including some prominent physicians, created this anti-mask league where they had at least one meeting where over 2,000 people met in a packed auditorium. None of them were wearing masks, of course, and, you know, completely violating what we would consider social distancing today to protest these orders.
What's really interesting, as you've pointed out, is that even though our country is very different than it was back then during World War I, there are quite a few parallels, especially in the context of wearing masks. Up until a few weeks ago, medical professionals were even telling us that masks weren't really useful, and now they're a mandate to enter many public spaces in many areas of the country. How do you interpret this?
You know, it's interesting that there are lots of parallels with 1918. There were physicians in 1918 who recommended the use of masks. There was a famous one, Woods Hutchinson, who walked around or drove around California in particular, and he was the one who pushed masks in San Francisco and Oakland as well as Los Angeles. But there were also plenty of people who thought that they were not effective. There were plenty of physicians who realized that these gauze masks were too porous to really trap any germs, and they would not be effective, and they were just likely to anger people. And I think we see that today as well, although masks are certainly better, at least the medical-grade masks. You know, I do find it interesting there are recommendations to use various face coverings, you know, made out of a bandana or a T-shirt. Now, I'm not an expert in face masks. I think the key takeaway from San Francisco is that if you're going to use face masks, you have to use them in conjunction with other social distancing measures and other these non-pharmaceutical interventions. And I think San Francisco's real issue was that initially they acted late. They did not keep these social distancing measures on for long enough. They didn't issue a second set of them when they needed to. But most importantly, they decided they were going to rely much more heavily on masks than on some of the other orders that would have been more effective.
Mm. So much that history can teach us about the ways that we can actually improve measures during something like a pandemic today. That's Dr. J. Alex Navarro. He's Assistant Director of the Center for Medical History at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.